Good morning or good afternoon, everyone, depending on where you are. My name is Maureen Conway. I'm Vice President for Policy Programs here at the Aspen Institute and Executive Director of the Economic Opportunities Program, and I am so delighted to welcome you to today's webinar about our Job Quality Fellowship. Just briefly, before we get started, I want to go over some of the webinar technology. So we are using the ReadyTalk web conferencing system, so just to note, there's a chat box in your lower left corner. This is how we're going to do all of the questions and answers. You can chat your questions in at any time during the presentation, and we will take them and compile them and track them, and we'll be organizing them to answer it at the question and answer section at the end. Hopefully you haven't had any challenges connecting to the audio and to the visual, but if you have any technical problems, please contact Tony Mastria at tony.mastria@aspeninst.org. I think those are the main things to cover on the technology, and hopefully that is all working well. If you can't hear things, you can also chat questions in, and we'll see them that way. Just quickly to go over the agenda for today's conversation. So we're very delighted to have with us on the call Sarah Kay, who is Vice President for Corporate Giving at the Prudential Foundation, Anna Wadia, Senior Program Officer, Future of Work at the Ford Foundation, Liddy Romero, Executive Director, Work-Life Partnership, and Managing Director, Work-Lab Innovations, and J.D. LaRock, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Corporation. What we're going to do is we're going to start with comments from our two foundation supporters of the Job Quality Fellowship, and then we'll hear from a couple of fellows about their experience in the Job Quality Fellowship in the inaugural cohort. We'll have a couple of comments about, in general, why we at the Aspen Institute think job quality is important and came to establishing the Job Quality Fellowship, and we will go over sort of the job quality fellow selection process, and then open it up for questions. With that, I think I want to just quickly go to our first presenter, to Sarah Kay. And we're really delighted that Sarah is here with us. And I will turn it over to Sarah to talk about why job quality is important to the Prudential Foundation, how they think about what job quality means in today's economy, and why you chose to invest in this experience. So, Sarah, over to you.
Great. Thank you, Maureen, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And hopefully we will see all these applications coming in for this fellowship opportunity. But just to give you a brief background on who we are as a company and why we're invested in this job quality issue, Prudential was founded more than 140 years ago on the idea that everyone should have the opportunity to achieve financial security and a peace of mind for their families. Our founder back then, he had a radical idea to offer life insurance for working families. It was against the standard business concept. Many people in the industry didn't think that the working class families would be able to pay the premium. But he saw that hardworking families were facing desperate choices. Whether they lost a child, a spouse, or other family members, they simply didn't have the means to bury them. And so our first product was burial insurance. And with that, he created an inclusive marketplace. He gave families an opportunity to protect themselves and create the peace of mind that we're trying to help everyone achieve. And so 140 years later, we're still, we've never strayed from that fundamental belief that financial security should be within reach for everyone. And while the why hasn't changed for us, the how has. We understand that in these challenging times, we know the opportunity gap is widening, especially for those from low-income underserved communities. And that opportunity to build financial security begins with preparing and connecting people to quality jobs. there are many definitions out there and a lot of different components, but at the very basic level, we believe that a quality job includes livable wages, safe working conditions, benefits that include health and retirement insurance, paid leave, stable working schedules, and career advancement opportunities. That sense of feeling you belong and you're providing value to the company is incredibly important. And yet, with all this, we know that there's not enough good jobs out there, particularly for low-income populations. We know people face instability in their work and their wages. It can help destabilize individuals and families and communities. At the same time, it's not just a moral and human imperative, it's an economic imperative. For a company, it increases their productivity to employees, it provides a better quality of life and opportunities for future generations. And so for us, we want to make sure that as some of the social security nets have eroded and that as people are working hard, they're not necessarily achieving the financial security that was once a play back in the day, that working people need stable quality jobs that are safe, that pay enough to live on, that offer essential benefits, and they need access to financial tools and resources to build their assets to weather financial emergencies. And so companies like us, like Prudential, not only have an imperative but an opportunity to play a vital role in bridging this and helping incentivize and recruit individuals who can really help change the narrative and push companies and policies to really think about what does it mean to improve job quality to ensure that people, particularly from low-income populations, have the ability to earn and to save for their financial security. And so with that, we've partnered with the Aspen Institute to create this Job Quality Fellowships, and we had the first cohort last year, and hopefully many of you will join us for the second cohort and really helping push the narrative, helping push companies and policymakers around this issue.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sarah. That was really helpful and terrific. And next we'll go to Anna Wadia, really with very much the same question, how you at the Ford Foundation are thinking about job quality and how you think about what it is, what it means, and why it's important to invest in encouraging quality jobs.
That's great. Thank you so much, Maureen. Thank you, Sarah. So first of all, welcome. It's really exciting to see so much interest in the Job Quality Fellowship. I just, wanted to share a little bit. As many of you know, the Ford Foundation has been thinking a lot about, our commitment to improving the quality of jobs, both in the present and in the future, as we transition to a more future of work orientation. I would certainly agree with everything that Sarah said about what the elements of a quality job are. And there's some that I'll list, though I don't think this is an exhaustive list, but certainly decent earnings, and I would say that's both from wages but also earnings through contracted or gig work that enable workers to, at minimum, meet their family's basic needs, opportunities for advancement, adequate hours, and some control over your schedule, and basic benefits like paid sick days, as well as access to social insurance programs that enable all workers to be both productive and responsible employers, as well as responsible family members. And then a quality job also requires a workplace that's free of racial, gender, sexual orientation, and other forms of discrimination. And finally, agency and voice on the job. So looking to the future, we think all of these elements of job quality are important, whether we're talking about the present of jobs or the future of jobs. But there definitely are some new questions that are raised by the impact of technology and other forces on the workplace. Some of the questions that we're looking into are ones like, if the technological change does finally lead to productivity increases, what are the ways in which workers can bargain for their fair share of those increases? If work is indeed becoming less secure, more precarious, and more contingent, how should we be thinking about earning a decent income from work? What's the future of collective bargaining in a more fissured workplace? And how can technology help aggregate worker voice and power? And, you know, related to this, how can workers be involved in decisions about the deployment of new technologies in ways that enhance their work and their productivity and their job quality rather than displace jobs? There are also a lot of questions related to what is our social contract going to be in the future, and I think Sarah alluded to these as well. You know, what is the responsibility of employers to provide decent wages and benefits to both standard and non-standard workers? What's the responsibility of companies which promote technologies that displace large numbers of workers? And what's the responsibility of government? What's the role of government or the role of society as a whole in maintaining social insurance programs that cover everyone? You know, and we can think about long-standing social insurance programs like unemployment insurance, Social Security. To what extent do they cover all different types of workers? And if they don't, how can they be reformed? And then also thinking about new forms of social insurance programs that people are innovating, like paid family leave or universal family care. How can they be designed to cover the changing workforce? So we see a lot of really challenging questions on the horizon, and really fundamental questions to how our society is going to be organized moving forward. And so efforts like the Job Quality Fellowship that bring people together from different worlds to build trust and to think creatively about solutions are more important than ever. And we've been really impressed. I've gotten to go to at least one or two of the Job Quality Fellowship convenings, and I've been really impressed at how the Aspen staff has been able to create a really safe and generative space for people to come together, whether they're a worker advocate or a policy wonk or a workforce development practitioner or somebody representing a private sector company, to come together and really grapple with these kinds of questions, even if they might be on the opposite sides of some policy debates or disagree, have different opinions or strategies. This fellowship creates trust and a space for people to grapple with these questions. So we're really excited about all the interest there is in the next cohort, and really looking forward to seeing who ends up coming together for the coming year. So thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much, Anna. That was really helpful. And I am just going to go straight to our first Job Quality Fellow, Liddy Romero, who's Executive Director of Work-Life Partnership and Managing Director of WorkLab Innovations, LLC. And she can talk a little bit about her experience with the Job Quality Fellowship and why the considerations of job quality are important to the work that she does in Denver. Liddy, over to you.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado, and have the benefit of participating in the first fellowship. And I think for me, my business is a lot of talking with employers about job quality. And although we might not use that word universally across all our employers, what the Job Quality Fellowship has allowed me to do is really get to a working definition with the people at the table, at least, and to come together on a quarterly basis and sometimes even frequently on a virtual basis to talk through how their working definitions are functioning and operating in their unique communities. And I think that's the value I think that this brings to my work, is understanding how people are talking about it in their local communities, coming together on a quarterly basis and then discussing how that works and what are the outcomes of it, and how, I guess, their constituents and stakeholders in their local communities are responding to it. And then I think how to pivot when needed. So the reason I say pivot is because when we're talking about job quality to businesses, you know, it doesn't – obviously businesses think that their jobs are quality, or hopefully most of them think that. And sometimes I think we use a lot of words to explain job quality. But in what I have found is actually that at least in Colorado and the cities that we're, that our model is functioning in, is that job quality, two-generation, family-friendly are almost kind of, I guess their goals are the same thing. And so if you're working in any of those spheres of influence, I think, you know, this job quality fellowship would be very meaningful to you. Two-generation is used a lot. Family-friendliness is used a lot. And I kind of use those interchangeably. Although it's really helpful when you come back to a group of peers who absolutely understand what you mean by all of that. So it's my job to translate, I think, what job quality means to the people I talk to, both in Colorado and in our cities as work life, our model is scaling nationally. It really is helpful to have that.
Great. Thank you so much, Lydian. That was really helpful. And I just wanted to encourage everybody also to remind everybody that you can chat questions through the chat feature. And I think, you know, there's a lot of these sort of common themes that have been brought up about sort of the narrative and how do we talk about job quality. And it was even a challenge for us when we tried to name the fellowship about what we should call it, because people do have different words and different language for talking about it. But I think as we've heard, you know, as you start to talk about how do you make it possible for people to earn a living, there starts to be a common understanding of what are some of the challenges and why we might want to address them. I'd like to go now to our next fellow, Jay DeLaRock, who's president and CEO of the Commonwealth Corporation. He's based in Massachusetts, and ask him for his perspective about why is job quality important to the work of the Commonwealth Corporation and some of the value he's seen in the Job Quality Fellowship. So, JD, over to you.
Thanks, Maureen, and hi, everybody. So, just a little background on my organization. Commonwealth Corporation is part of the executive branch of Massachusetts state government. We're a public-private authority that works at the intersection of workforce development, education, and economic development. And we do a variety of things, and one of them is we operate on behalf of the state a $25 million annual trust called the Workforce Training Fund, which provides grants to employers to upskill their employees and engage in job creation activities. And for me, the Job Quality Fellowship has been instrumental in thinking about our work in administering the Workforce Training Fund, which is one of the main things we do, and not only assessing the degrees to which we currently embed job quality principles in the administration of that work, but also what we need to do next. For example, in making decisions to assess applications and award grants to companies throughout the state, we currently look at things like the companies and the extent to which they have diverse employees. We look at things like the extent to which the training will be used to help employees earn better wages on the job. We look to fund training approaches that do amplify worker voice and worker participation in the life and growth of their company. But I think the Job Quality Fellowship has also encouraged us to think about the next level dimensions. To that end, the work that we've done as a fellowship group to really articulate the components of job quality and to come to a more common understanding, at least for us as a fellowship group, around the totality of the components has been essential. I'd also say that for us in Massachusetts as leaders, as part of Governor Baker's administration, It's really been helpful in moving the policy discourse beyond some of the places where it's been. So in Massachusetts, as is the case in many states, there's a robust discourse on raising the minimum wage and the fight for 15 and things that many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with. We've been able to advance the conversation beyond those things, which are important, but also kind of a debate where people tend to retreat to their familiar foxholes. But having the same conversation with a job quality lens in a way that positions employers and employees and government as all components of the solution has been really helpful in fostering a way to bring the dialogue forward from where it's been. So that's been great. In more practical terms, the fellowship has also been great because it's allowed me to connect with another fellow who happens to work at the Boston Fed, and together our two organizations, in partnership with the Baker administration, are now launching a job quality research initiative where we are really going to go deep with employers in Massachusetts and assess at a deeper level than we've been able to do before, what are the barriers that hold them back from instituting greater job quality components in the positions that they offer to employees. We take the position at Commonwealth Corporation that many employers care about job quality. They know that it's good for their bottom line. They want to do more, but sometimes there are barriers, whether they are regional barriers, whether there are structural barriers in their particular industry. Healthcare is a good example of that. And so we are in a position at Commonwealth Corporation to try to help them surmount those barriers. And by partnering up with another fellow, we've been able to launch a process where we can actually help employers do that next level work. So it's been a fantastic experience from my perspective, and I know is going to benefit not only Commonwealth Corporation, in fact it has, but ultimately benefit many, many people in Massachusetts.
Great. Thank you so much, JB. That was really terrific. I just want to give a couple of comments before I turn it over to my colleague, Mark Popovich. Just to say a little bit about how we at the Aspen Institute also came to this. And much of this, you know, you've sort of heard through the various presenters about how do we understand the challenge of job quality and how in a country where we want people to support themselves through work, if work is not supporting strong families and strong communities, how do we think about that? And the approach we take at the Economic Opportunities Program, we very much think about, well, how do we understand what communities are doing on the ground in a practical way to make a difference in addressing this challenge? And so what we were really trying to do in the Job Quality Fellowship is to find leaders from different areas of work, from across the country working in different local economic environments and different state political systems, et cetera. What are they doing on the ground that's making a difference in terms of trying to address the challenge of quality jobs? How do we start building economic systems where there are more jobs that people can work hard at and be rewarded for that hard work? So it was really kind of trying to think about a what works and why kind of approach to the challenge. And, you know, really also not trying to trade off different ideas, but trying to say what's the role of worker advocacy and what's the role of workforce education? What's the role of business strengthening and what's the role of family strengthening policies? And how do we think about how these things can be complementary ideas rather than competitive? Some of the work that we did leading up to this job quality challenge, we were really looking at, well, what's going on for, we focused very much on strategies that help low and moderate income working people sort of connect to better opportunities. And we really built this sort of raise the floor and build ladders framework because what we saw was for people who aren't getting to a basic level of economic stability in their work, it's really hard for them to participate in the variety of opportunities, education opportunities, and other opportunities that might help them sort of pursue economic mobility. and that there's a lot of dimensions to getting to that basic economic stability. And so how do we think about the range of strategies that maybe can be brought together so that we can get more people to a place where they have economic stability and they can actually make choices rather than just sort of trying to get through the week without being able to have good choices in front of them about how to build their economic life and support themselves and support their families. So that was the thinking that we brought to this. And I think you've heard Liddy and JD describe a little of the of work we've done together. I hope you've had a chance to also look at the website where you can see the Job Quality Fellows Statement of Purpose, as well as profiles of a number of the fellows that are participating in this first cohort of the fellowship. But there is a wide range of approaches to addressing the job quality challenge, and a number of them are represented in this year's fellowship, and we hope they will be in the second cohort too, because we do need many strategies and a range of partners to achieve inclusive economic prosperity. And I think that just brings me to the final point that I wanted to make, is that, you know, we sort of, there's many lessons we can learn from history, and some of them are positive and some of them are less positive. And one of the things we need to be mindful of as we move forward is how do we bring a lens of equity and inclusion in all of the job quality work that we do, so that it's not just quality jobs for some, but it really is quality jobs for all. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Mark Popovich, to sort of walk through our process and our next steps.
Hi, my name is Mark Popovich. I'm the director of the Good Companies, Good Jobs Initiative here at the Economic Opportunities Program, and I'm working with Maureen on developing and implementing this Job Quality Fellowship Program. I have to say, the first year experience with the initial cohort, the inaugural cohort, has been an amazing experience, as much for us on the Aspen end and many of our colleagues who serve as resource people in meeting with this great cohort of people, as it has been, I hope, for the Job Quality Fellows themselves. So let's get to the meat of the question, which is the selection of the Job Quality Fellows for the second cohort. I'm pleased that they have a very high level of retention of listeners and participants on the webinar. We've retained a very high percentage to this point. So a couple of points to make. First, in order to apply, you have to get the application. In order to get the application, you must be nominated. So you must be nominated in order to apply, but it's also the case that you can nominate yourself. There's no limitation on that. You should just feel free to go ahead and do that. We certainly had many applications in the last round that came in through self-nomination, you should go ahead and do that. Once we get through that process of the nominations, we will have a effort at the staff level to screen through. Last year, we had 177 applications. This year, we expect to have about the same number, if not more, because we're in the second round. And, you know, we'll go through that and get down to a limited number, maybe in the neighborhood of 30 or so, that we will take through get advice from an external selection committee. And they'll give us advice about trying to form up the final cohort so that we can go out and take a look at that and form up the final group. Recognize that many different kinds of fields of work are not only applicable or eligible to apply, but are encouraged to apply. We love our colleagues in workforce development, but this is certainly not limited to workforce development. We had quite a span of folks from government, local level, Oakland and New York city governments, to the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, to nonprofit sector, workforce and community groups, but also business finance and other kinds of advocate groups as well. We had a union representative from SEIU California, as well as alternative to groups who are working on organizing workers. And then we had employers themselves who are working very diligently on job quality issues. So please consider yourself eligible, and because we're looking for blending, as the last slide showed, across these different fields, because no one field has the ability to bring enough change to move the needle on this indicator. The individuals who should apply should be leaders in their organization, and they should demonstrate in their application their commitment to change and their record so far of trying to bring that change across. I want to emphasize that we had quite a diverse, inclusive group in the first round, both in terms of who they themselves represent, but also who the kinds of populations that they work with. And we want to encourage that again. In particular, there are communities that have been left out from the economic mainstream and left behind for far too long. And we want to encourage groups that are working in those areas to apply as well. Next, we'll go to the timeline. So we're in the process now of getting nominations and application materials out. The nominations themselves are going to close this week. So we need people to complete the nominations, either of themselves or having somebody else nominate them. So if you're considering nominating another person, please go ahead and get that done this week so that we can have them in our list before the list closes, and we can send them out the application process. There is a couple more weeks beyond that, to June 28th, where the application process itself closes. We will then take June into August to take a look at what we have and to manage the selection curating process, bring it to an advisory committee and get their advice as well. We anticipate announcing the second cohort of fellows right after Labor Day, and, of course, we would be in contact with the likely selectees for that second cohort to complete our due diligence effort before that date. Then you see the dates in October of 2018, March of 2019, and August of 2019 when the meetings will occur. We've emphasized those again in the timeline here because when you get your application, if you are applying, you will see in the first page of that application, we're asking you to look at those dates and commit to those dates. So we need to have people who are available on those dates because that is the meetings themselves are a key part of the job quality fellow experience. And we've locked in these dates so that people can look at their schedules and adjust their schedules as needs be. So that's the background information. Let's see what questions that we have at this point.
Great. Thanks, Mark. So we have a number of questions at this point, and we'll start going through them. And I just want to encourage everybody to keep sending questions in. So quickly, a couple of questions. One question is about the nomination process. So does being self-nominated hurt your application? Absolutely not. We encourage self-nominations. That is perfectly fine. Another had a question about whether somebody from cohort one needs to nominate future candidates. They do not, although we encourage them to do that, to nominate candidates. But to underscore again, so self-nomination is perfectly fine, and if you want to make sure you get the application materials, go ahead and nominate yourself. It may be the case that somebody else nominates you as well. That's fine, but self-nomination is perfectly allowable.
We have a question about whether in the application process, the application process is an online process. You'll be able to go into the system, look at an outline of the questions. You can start the application, you can save it, you can go back to it, but the important thing is when you're finished it, to submit it so that we can see it on our end. It is allowable for you to include a letters of recommendation. It is not required. We are asking people, however, to include, for example, a resume, a one- or two-page resume, so we can have that background as well.
There's a question about whether somebody needs to be from the C-suite or a VP level of an organization. And I think I want to emphasize here what we're really looking for is that you can make the case that you're in a place to implement change and that you have some experience to build upon, that your experience might be something that, you know, would be something others in the fellowship can learn from and as well as people outside of the fellowship can learn from. So it's not so much that you have a particular title as much as you can demonstrate that you have the ability to make change and you're well positioned to do so.
So there was an earlier question about how do you improve job quality in, for example, retail jobs or food, fast food service jobs like Dunkin' Donuts and the rest. And, you know, I'm not going to go into too much depth here. We've published a lot of materials about raising floors and building ladders. I would give you more information. But, you know, certainly we look at dimensions of wage and benefits, which, you know, we've looked at, for example, Zeynep Tan's work about very competitive, low-margin, different employers in the retail sector, yet some are high-road employers who provide better wages and have lower turnover and provide better customer service as a result. But there are issues in retail and fast food around scheduling and accommodating people's scheduling needs and giving them more certainty about hours. There's issues around supervisors. Most people leave or turn over mainly because they're firing their supervisor, not because they're dissatisfied necessarily with their job itself. And then there are issues of job ladders or advancement opportunities. So there's just a short list of the kinds of things that you could do to look at job quality improvement in a place like Dunkin' Donuts or retail.
We have a couple of questions about entrepreneurship. So a question about will programs that focus on entrepreneurship be considered and how entrepreneurship plays into the fellowship conversation. So entrepreneurship is certainly something we've thought about in this year's cohort of fellows. There's organizations that work with entrepreneurs, encourage people to start businesses to build their own opportunities, as well as encourage businesses to think about the quality of opportunities they're building for those who help them build their business. So I think there's certainly opportunities for people who are working with entrepreneurs and to encourage entrepreneurship to think about their work in the context of the Job Quality Fellowship, and we'd be eager to see your application.
So there are a couple of questions. Travel and related costs are covered by the fellowship. Your costs of staying at facilities and all of that is covered by us. The travel to participate in these meetings is reimbursed by us. That's included in the budget. There is not a stipend scheduled for this for any of the fellows. It's not been set up in this way. We are intending to select 15 fellows. Those of you who have sharp eyes will notice that we had 16 fellows in the first cohort, so I would say around 15 fellows, and cause Maureen to laugh about that a little bit. The question was around applying and reviewing. Do we review once you're nominated? No, we don't review anything until you've applied. So once you have a nomination, once somebody has nominated you or you've nominated yourself and you receive the application link, you need to fill out the application and you need to submit the application before the deadline so that we can then begin the review process. Then there was a question around if your application has been sent, will we send some information that you will confirm that we've received the nomination? And we will. So you will know that we have received your nomination.
So there's a question if you've previously participated in another Aspen program. Are you eligible to apply and participate? Absolutely. You are eligible to apply and participate in this program. And in fact, Lydia Romero had previously participated in a different fellowship program here at the Aspen Institute. So once a fellow, always a fellow, and you can be multiple kinds of fellows. So that is certainly not a barrier to participation. There's also a question about the dates for the convenings. Are they absolute at this point? And the dates, certainly the dates for the first convening are our firm. We have to arrange those dates in advance. It's hard to arrange for space and so that is a very firm date. The reason we put the dates for all three is so that people can really plan accordingly. I think that we would like to consider them pretty firm because that way everybody knows that those are the dates that they should put on their calendar and participate. If the entire group for some reason wanted to move the second or third date, then we could still at this point accommodate that, but we would not move it unless everybody could make that work. At this point, we're considering those dates firm so that we give somebody something firm to plan on.
We're not encouraging rebellion, though sometimes it happens.
Right, so we go with it.
In terms of the geography, we have some groups, as in the first cohort, are working on a national level, some that are working on a subnational regional level, some that are working in specific states, and some that are working at the community level. So any of those are within play. We are looking for diversity across the group. I think we often get applications from the Northeast Corridor and from the Pacific West Corridor, and we have a good selection of folks from other regions of the country in the first cohort, and we would expect that to happen in the second cohort as well. So I wouldn't say that we're emphasizing any particular geography. All geographies are welcome to apply.
We have a question about our ambitions for creating collaborations among fellows and other examples beyond the Commonwealth Corporation and the Boston Fed. We have, so building on the geography question, it is easier to collaborate on a practical level with people who live near you. We have several fellows from the Bay Area, and we've seen work with the San Francisco Airport and Pacific Community Ventures doing work together to encourage entrepreneurship and local businesses within the context of the airport. So that was an interesting collaboration, but I don't believe as yet we've heard some conversation, but I don't believe as yet we've heard of an actual collaboration amongst fellows that we brought together who were not sort of geographically proximate to each other. That said, in terms of the work around some of the narrative things, the fellows continue to work with each other on those elements.
So there was a question around how do we sort of consider success in our approach to the Job Quality Fellowship Program. So I think it's mainly around the outcomes, the outputs that we had highlighted in Maureen's comments earlier, and that is we want to help build the capacity, augment the existing really effective work of the fellows themselves. We want to be able to develop a more effective narrative about this. We want to document the practices and the strategies and see what they can carry out to others. And we want to be able to lift up this issue, particularly across sectors. I'm wondering if any of our other presenters, particularly but not limited to the Job Quality Fellows themselves, would want to chime in on that one, what they've seen so far, how they would ask us to think about the effectiveness of this program going forward. Anybody want to hop off of mute and want to add in?
Hi, yeah, this is Woody. And kind of speaking to the first question before that was the collaboration. I do feel that the group of people brought together are very action-oriented and tend to really want to do something with the knowledge that we're building together. And I have felt kind of more inquiries from San Francisco and D.C. and Boston because I think of my participation in the fellowship. And as far as kind of the successes so far, I really do truly think that I wouldn't be able to have credible conversations if it weren't for my position on this fellowship, talking through with state officials in Colorado, as well as to some of our interested cities who are interested in replicating the model in which I do with work-life partnership. I think it really does bring some credibility and ground the work in that, again, that working definition.
This is JD. I'll add to a couple of thoughts on what's worked for me as a fellow. There were pieces of our whole ecosystem that for whatever reason I hadn't been well exposed to in my career thus far. So, for example, our fellows who are associated with CDFIs, that's been a new space for me, and I've really benefited from learning from fellows who are in that space and others. Folks who are in the entrepreneurial space in our fellowship have provided tremendous learning. I also have very much appreciated the Aspen Institute's efforts to connect us with people and leaders and conferences and summits that are part of the broader Aspen network. Oftentimes, those people have provided great wisdom and insights into the politics of the issues that we're looking at, as well as the strategic aspects. So it comes together in a very nice way. From both a macro level and a very on the ground perspective, and as I said, it's that's been able to and having the dedicated time on a regular basis to think through the issues has been instrumental in enabling me to come back to my corporation and work with my team to make something concrete out of it.
Great, thank you both. We have a few questions about the experience of the fellowship, so. There's a question about what's the day-to-day convenings, what are they like, what do you actually do in the fellowship meetings, and what are the most challenging aspects of the fellowships, and also, and in particular, there's a question about how does private industry respond to this idea of job quality improvement, and I think that these questions really are meant for you two, Lydia and JD. So I'm gonna allow you to respond to those points.
I can. This is Lydia. I can respond to the second one. JD, you want to take the first one? But I talk with industry all the time. That is my job. That's my work. I try to engage industry in accelerating their investments in frontline workers. And what I find really helpful about this is that, first of all, when I say I'm, part of the Aspen Institute Job Quality Fellowship with them, I think just the name brings some, obviously, credibility with the work that I'm doing. And they start to listen. And then second of all, I think it helps kind of build a framework when I'm talking with them about, like, if an employer wants to do, a family-friendly policy and they are looking at scheduling, I mean, that obviously falls into the definition of job quality. And I don't have to use that word, but I do have resources at my fingertips now through this fellowship that I can call upon who will help me get to that assistance that then I can then send off to the employer. So it definitely serves as kind of a resource pool, and it allows me to, I guess, bounce ideas off of my fellows, but also what they're doing so that I can give my employers the best resources. I also think that that it's not as obviously prep. Well, I think one question earlier was about the retail industry and what they're doing, and I do feel, I've been working with employers for about 10 years now, trying to get them to make investments in their frontline workers. And I do feel like there's an obvious groundswell on employers trying to do better and just not knowing where to turn or where to go to. And when they land next to me or in front of me, I obviously now have people and resources to send them to and refer to give them the best resource for job quality initiatives that they may want to instigate themselves?
So this is JD. Thank you, Liddy. To say a word about the specific things that we do as fellows, I think there's been a very nice mix of reading pieces of various kinds beforehand and having discussions about them as a way to get sort of conceptual conversations about job quality going. Mark and Maureen have led us through a process, an iterative process of really defining and in as specific terms as we can what job quality means for this fellowship and maybe, for the world. There's been a nice mix of scholars. I think about one of the scholars we heard from Rutgers who spoke with us about employee-owned companies and different options there, as well as, like I said, leaders like Dan Glickman from the Aspen Institute, who, of course, is a long-serving person in government, and commentators and thinkers like E.J. Dionne, who spoke with us about this space and had some, broad insights to share. Certainly the networking aspect, both within the fellowship group and then in connection with things like the Aspen Inequality and Opportunity Summit, which is bringing together people not just on the job quality issue, but around a whole host of issues that interrelate, has been a great learning experience as well as a great networking experience. And so that's the day-to-day is rolls up into a really diverse set of activities, and that has kept things interesting and generative and engaging so far throughout the fellowship year. I'll just add on the employer side, as I alluded to in my initial comments, sometimes in this discourse around job quality, employers are not always positioned positively, and to be sure, sometimes employers deserve not to be positioned positively when it comes to job quality. But I personally have really appreciated having the employer fellows who represent employers. We have a fellow who works with Walmart and has been a very active fellow in our group, shared a lot of, in very honest terms, the company's journey and her own journey engaging with the job quality issue in a meaningful way in the context of a company that, rightly or wrongly, is critiqued in the public discourse. Having a safe space to have conversations like that has been very, very useful. It's not only given me a deeper lens into what the internal conversations at a place like that really are like and may be like for other employers, but, again, goes beyond the easy discourse and takes things to a deeper level, and that's really important.
So certainly the fellows are a resource to each other. It's been enormously exciting to watch that develop, but they've also been a resource to others. I mean, E.J. Dionne and others who've come in, they've been as excited to hear from and meet the fellows and learn about their work as they have been to talk about their own frameworks of their own work, because it really is, because it is an impressive group. They have experience that drives across so many different areas, and it's a perspective that a lot of people feel is enriching to the work that they do. So it's been important to bring these groups together and allow conversations to go two ways. I will say, for the record, we don't work people 24 hours a day. There may be an opportunity to go for a hike at Maroon Bells at Aspen, Colorado. There may be an opportunity to have an unprogrammed meal. We may give you a question that you might want to struggle with right then, and you may be building trust that's necessary for a group like this to work together. But it's not always programmed.
I see that we're very close to time. I did want to give a chance to Anna or to Sarah to see if they have any final remarks before we close, Anna or Sarah? And to unmute their phones.
Hi, this is Anna. I don't think I have anything to add. I think all of the questions were answered thoroughly, so look forward to meeting the new cohort in a couple months.
Thank you.
And this is Sarah. Yeah, and I don't have anything else to add either. Just excited to see who applies, and we welcome you into the next cohort.
Terrific. Well, thank you. And thank you to everybody on the line for sticking with us through the hour. Please remember that you do need to nominate yourself. If there's questions that weren't addressed during this webinar that you think of later, you can always email us. We're happy to take your questions. If you have any challenges with any of our nomination forms, application forms, you have Tony Mastria's email. That's always a good one to have. He is the person who can address any technical difficulties with any of those forms. So thank you again for your interest in the Job Quality Fellowship. We're excited about welcoming a new cohort and hope we have more to share on who they are very soon. Thank you, everybody, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.